Dad's on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare.
So, welcome to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. We will be bringing you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on fatherhood, masculinity, boys' issues. I'm Bill Cable, and our guest this morning is Clint Gregan, who's going to talk to us about his new book, Reservoir Dad. He's got it covered, I see on the title, on the cover page, he does. It's a book in which Clint opens up and gives a very personal account of the good and the bad of being a stay-at-home dad. Clint is an award-winning blogger. He chose to become a stay-at-home dad to his now four sons with his wife Tanya, and he has sought refuge in writing when it's all got a bit much. So, Clint, how are you today?
Yeah, good, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Look, I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed your book. It covers such a wide range of emotions. I find at times I'm there's tears in my eyes. Other times I'm laughing out loud.
That was the experience of writing it as well.
Were there any problems in having all these personal issues? I mean, did your parents-in-law and your wife and other people feel uncomfortable?
Luckily enough, my mother and father-in-law have a pretty good sense of humour, and they're not easily offended. And I did run the post which featured them in it by them first, and it was always a good sign when I heard them laughing.
Yes.
They've taken it pretty well. In fact, I think Paulette, who's Tanya's mum, she sort of liked being a bit of a celebrity there for a while.
Well, it's the sort of book where I feel I know your children so well. You know, you've got the boxers, Archie, Lewis, Tyson, and now your latest edition. Is it Marky? Is the way it's pronounced?
Mackie. Yeah, Mackie's actually three now. He just turned three. Yeah, so I think he's two when I was writing the book, because I wrote the book in a specific time period, because basically from the time I became a stay-at-home dad, with, you know, delving off into the history of me and Tanya meeting there as well. But, about a year from the time I finished writing it, so Mackie's another year older.
Yes, so that's right. I mean, the book starts from when you first laid eyes on Tanya, and then it goes right through to the vasectomy. So
it's
covered the wide range.
Cycle.
And although I think it's more a memoir than a what to do book, there is plenty of advice for dads in the book. I think of one bit in particular where you describe with women how they need you to listen rather than to necessarily go out and fix whatever the problem is. Is that something you've brought into your married life?
I think it sort of changes. You know, what I've found from being a stay-at-home dad and being in that role is that I think sometimes that our emotions and how we act are sort of influenced by what we do. Because I find that sometimes that's true for Tanya. I can say, you know, for my wife, you know, she just needs me to listen. But at other times, it's the same for me. I've had a rough day. I don't need something to be fixed. I just need someone to let all my frustrations out on for 20 minutes. You know, the thing about, I had a mate at a gym once, and he said to me, he was talking about his wife and how he came home, and, God, as soon as I get home, she just, you know, meets me at the door and just doesn't stop talking for 20 minutes. Well, you know, women, they just don't stop talking, and I thought, geez, that's exactly what I did to Tanya yesterday. So it might just be something about being the isolation that comes with being a stay-at-home parent more than being a man or a woman. I'm not exactly sure.
Yes, well, there are a lot of role reversals, aren't there, in this whole area, and it's interesting for you, I guess, to see from the other side.
Yeah, I know, and you know, it's the same. It's really eye opening, and I wonder if women going into the workforce experienced the same thing. They might have had expectations about or assumptions about what men were like, and and then went in there and found that they had to they were adopting some of the same characteristics or dealing with the same frustrations, and it wasn't so gender specific. It was more about a human finding themselves in a particular place in life. Because it is interesting. I think that this whole idea about, I've heard someone being interviewed yesterday, a man who'd written a book, and he was, part of his book was explaining how men have to, you know, see themselves in terms of what they do as a job, and they're not as good as women, and not as good at being empathetic as women are. And I thought, well, that's just, I don't think that's true, because I think what I've found too is that by having to be more emotionally available for young children, that I've probably become more comfortable experiencing and expressing emotion myself, which is something I wouldn't have said 10 years ago. So I think I really wonder, it really makes me question all these gender assumptions, that it might be more of how we've segregated each other into gender roles, which has caused us to behave and experience the world in a certain way, and maybe it's not so fixed as we think it is.
Yes, and do you think this phenomenon of being a stay-at-home dad while the mother goes out to work and bring the bacon home, is that becoming more common, do you think?
I think it is, but I think it's more that because men and women are sharing, you know, it's no longer assumed that the man's going to be the working and the woman's going to be staying at home. There's educated men and women these days, all with career, possibly have career goals. And so it's more of a negotiation on a family level now when the kids come along. I mean, that's pretty much what it was like for me and Tanya. We negotiated. We said, you know, what's more important to you? And to Tanya, her career was very important. To me, I just worked for money, basically. It wasn't so important to me. And so from that, it was decided that I'd stay home with the kids, because it would be just ridiculous for Tanya to give up something she loved doing for me to continue going out and doing something I didn't quite love as much. Just because she was a woman and I was a man. So I think that sort of negotiation is happening a lot more. And from that, you are getting more stay-at-home dads, but you're also getting more families where mum and dad are sharing. They might both work part-time, or mum might stay at home for a year and then dad might take a year to stay home. So there's a lot more variation on what the men and women are doing in the household, I think.
And is it a factor as to which of the partners is going to be earning more money? Would that enter into that discussion?
I think it has to, yeah. Money's obviously a big issue. Being financially stable is huge. And at the time, when Tanya and I, when I became a stay-at-home dad, the pay wasn't so different, but the potential for the pay to be, for Tanya to earn more was there. And it's turned out that way. So it was a good decision for us financially as well. So I think you have to take all of those issues in. And there are, you know, because men and women are, like I said, both educated and having career goals, that's what we have these days. And if that could be a very big deciding factor for a lot of couples on who's going to earn the most money. Like Tanya's lucky, my wife, I don't meet too many people who really love their work, where my wife really loves to work, but it might just come down for some couples to a financial decision about who earns the most, and that's fair enough too. It's good that we have these options available to us now to make those decisions.
That's true, yes, the society is changing in that way. And we're speaking with Clint Gregan, the author of a recent book called Reservoir Dad. He's got it covered. And Clint, we might just take a short break now. We'll just play a song. It's a song that I want to ask you about your feelings in the context of raising four very lively children, four lively boys. The song's called Let It Be by the Beatles.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, where our guest today is Clint Gregan, and we're talking about his new book, Reservoir Dad. Now, Clint, as I was reading the initial stages of the book, I must admit I was wondering, you know, why would anyone put themselves through this? Because, it, you know, with the vomit and the throwing up food and the dirty nappies and the all the other things that you get caught up with and the noise and the constant attention-seeking, but then later in the book, I think Archie asks you the direct question, you know, Dad, do you enjoy being a dad? So do you enjoy being a dad?
I really do. I think writing for me is a great way of dealing with the frustrations that come with being a parent as well. And for me, if I've had a really bad day, writing about it and injecting some humour into it and having a bit of time to be retrospective and think about the goods and the bads all at once is really sort of therapeutic. But yes, I really love being a dad. We wouldn't have made the decision to have a third and then a fourth child if we didn't like it. It's a massive joy. At the same time that I have days where I just feel like I need to just disappear because it's just full on. But then last night, Tyson, just had his last mouthful of food. He was sitting on the couch. I was just, you know, trying to get him to eat his last bit. And then I turn around after shoveling the last bit of food into his mouth, and he starts crying and grabbing his chest. And I thought he might have swallowed a bit of chicken bone or something.
Yeah.
And he tells me that he swallowed a coin.
Oh.
I was like, what? And I start freaking out, and he was saying it was hurting his back, and so I ended up having to go to the hospital. And, you know, it had been a pretty rough day yesterday, and so I was a little bit, you know, rushing around and a little bit frustrated. And then Tanya took him to the hospital. I was getting the rest of the kids ready for bed. And just that fear all of a sudden, God, what if something happens to him? You know, when he'd been a real, real bugger yesterday. I just couldn't handle not having them around. No matter how frustrating it gets, I just couldn't imagine life without them.
Yes,
and I think that's the thing. And you know, we've just started doing getting our Christmas movies organised to watch over the next couple of weeks. And that time of just being able, that excitement of being able to sit down and watch the Christmas movies you watched as a kid with your kids, is all those sort of little joys are there all the time. And, I couldn't imagine. I was talking to Tanya about this as well, because we were reading a few articles about people who've chosen to be childless, which is perfectly fine, but I just could not imagine not having children. So it's a massive reward for me.
Now, is this something that you've always thought from being a young boy, or is it something that just developed after you met Tanya?
Yeah, I've always wanted to have kids.
Mm.
I've always had that in me. And it was actually me who brought up, when Tanya and I were around 30, said, you know, I want to have kids. We've done enough partying, we can relax on the partying a little bit and do this. So it was actually me that got the discussion going about having kids. It's always been there for me. I was always going to have children.
Yes, there are some delightfully funny parts in the book, and I think one of the bits I liked was when you were getting together with the men's group for regular, what do you call them, play groups, I suppose you'd call them.
Yeah, but, Northern Dad's group, Melbourne.
And there was one scene, I think, where the fathers sort of get a bit uneasy, not quite sure what to say, and then one said, oh, you forget how small they are. I think it was when you just turned up with Tyson. And then one after the other, they all said the same thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they've been a really great support, the Northern Dad's group. I've been going there for about 6 or 7 years, maybe longer now. Mm. And they were great, because there was those early times where you felt a bit unsure, and there's the social pressure that makes you feel like you might not be in the right place because you're a man doing this thing. And then to find other blokes who are completely comfortable with it and also doing a similar thing is a great support. So yeah, they've been great, and really, it's great because, you know, this thing about, you know, men or women, you know, is our gender, you know, preferences fixed and all that sort of stuff. When I get together with those blokes, I really enjoy that sort of blokey humour, you know, and I don't get that anywhere else. So it's great to sit there. We can talk about the kids, we can talk about our wives, and we can make, you know, maybe inappropriate jokes occasionally when the kids aren't within earshot. And it's just good to have that space.
And have you seen the show, the TV show, House Husbands?
Yeah, I have. I actually reviewed every episode of the first season on my blog. And Rhys Muldoon launched the book at readings in Carlton.
Great. Oh, yeah. So there is that link then. And
it's just a little link through my website, because I started writing about them and interviewed a few of the characters and the producer. So yeah, that's there. I don't know what I think about the show. I think it's good sort of light entertainment, and it's good to have a show that puts men in that position, because it, you know, leads to discussion and more normalising of it. But I think, you know, you've got to take the show for what it is. They still do use this sort of stereotypes for the basis of a lot of their humour, which is okay, and a bit of fun.
Yeah. So is it largely realistic, do you think?
To tell you the truth, I haven't watched the last season. The first season, one of my criticisms was that they didn't seem to ever do housework. I think the first time I saw anything was Rhys Muldoon's character carrying an empty washing basket, and that was pretty much it. I think he tripped over the cord of a iron, and that was pretty much it. And there's no real, the child wrangling is not really there, and there was too many shots of men, of the stay-at-home dads, sitting in a pub together playing darts or something. I thought, God.
Yeah, if only.
Looks like a nice job. Yeah. So I didn't think it depicted the home life realistically, but like I said, you got to take what it is. It's a light-hearted show.
Yes, and you're listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network, and our guest today is Clint Gregan, the author of Reservoir Dad. He's got it all covered. Now, Clint, we've talked about some of the humorous parts of the book, but there is another emotion drawn out when you talked about the heartbreak of losing a child, having a stillborn child. You open up again on that. That must have been very traumatic for all the family and the extended family.
Yeah, it wasn't a stillborn. It was a miscarriage.
A miscarriage.
Yeah, a miscarriage. But it was very traumatic, and I was quite surprised by how affected I was by it. If you had asked me beforehand, I was very dismissive of it. Actually, to me, they were a baby was a bunch of cells at that point, and not much more, and. If you had a miscarriage, it was just because the cell didn't form properly, and so it was the body's way of getting rid of it. So it wasn't actually a real child. But there was an accident, our only accidental pregnancy, and it was a bit of a shock. And then we really got used to the idea and looking forward to it. And we were in there for our scan, and up came the image of the baby with the ultrasonographer, and I could just tell the limbs hadn't formed properly, and it wasn't moving like the other babies had moved when we had the scans. And so, you know, that was really just a shocking thing, because I think that what we'd done is, and this was what I'd done, I'd just made a space in my life for the baby already. I'd been imagining the baby, how it would hold on to the jumpsuits, because the baby will have to go and have these jumpsuits. We were thinking about where we're going to place the cot in the house, all those sort of things. So when we came home from the scan with, you know, not even a photo or anything, and an appointment to have the baby removed, it was really a massive emotional experience for me. Like, I think I handled it. I took it even harder than Tanya did, which I found very surprising.
Nice.
But yeah, and it was funny too, you know, that man thing, or the pressure that society might place on us, because I could see firsthand that I was really struggling. But there was no real support for me. People would ask me how Tanya was going, and I still feel selfish to even say this. But then I spoke to other blokes who were close to me, I knew, and they told me that their wives had miscarriages as well, and I didn't know that until. And so there was that thing about being a man and that support just not being there, and even that you're not allowed to feel that emotion. It's not for you, you know. It's all the focus is on mum, which is a good thing, but I think there has to be focus on dad at those points as well.
Yes, look, we could probably spend a whole interview talking about that, and there are other things I'd love to talk to you about, like when you taught your child to ride a bike. I think that's always one of the most traumatic things in life.
And, yeah, still going through that with another child.
No, never ends. I love your choice of the music titles that you sprinkle throughout the book at very appropriate times, but we're running out of time. I just want to let everybody know that thanks to Random House Books, we have a couple of copies of the book to give away to a lucky listener. So go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email telling us where you heard the show, and we'll be in touch. Clint, I wish you all the very best with the book, and thank you very much for coming on the program and being a guest of Dads on the Air today.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It was great fun.
Thanks very much, Clint.
We'll
see. If people would like to listen to the show again or go any of our other shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. And look, one final thing, Clint, you've picked a song for us. Can you tell us again what song you've chosen? Well, I'll tell you, actually.
I've chosen Stimulation by Wah Wah Nee. 80s music, as you see in the book, 80s music is a real sort of life raft for me, but I can't pick why I like this song. Whenever it comes on, you know what I think? I was around about 12 when it came out, so I'm guessing I'd probably fallen in love with someone at school, and this song was popular around at the time, and it sort of triggers some sort of emotional response.
Well,
that's all I can find to say. That's why I picked it.
That's great. Let's go with that now, and we'll see you again next week on Dad's on the Air.
Nation.